Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. This is a podcast brought to you by At Conkers 3. My name is Peter Higgins and At Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Pete, how are you today, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Not bad at all.
Good to have you with me again today, Pete. And how is it in sunny Windsor today?
Yeah, it's dull and grey and... But hey, mate, we're all locked down, so you know it's doesn't really matter what the weather's doing; it's pretty irrelevant, isn't it?
It is, mate. I think we're going to have to talk about COVID-19 and coronavirus and different things that are going on, because you know we appreciate we've got listeners scattered all over the globe listening to this, and they're all in different states of flux. Yes, that was flux, I said, not anything else.
I think everything's a bit fluxed up, mate.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I'm not sure where you want to start with this, Pete.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think we're back to the what we said before, really. There's really this sort of two strands to it. Or you've got the sort of virus problem on the one hand, and then you've got the economic malaise on the other hand. And sadly, the two are very intertwined. And even more sadly, the first one is just killing ridiculous amounts of people. And I mean, the numbers are just nuts, you know. And it's just barking. I think America is in for a really big hit. I just get that impression from, you know, I've been watching CNN a bit and stuff. And you just get the impression from that, you know, it's, they haven't been doing much serious lockdown at all. And you just can't help thinking that that's going to catch up with them at some point.
Quite possibly, mate. I think what's concerning a few people here is that more and more doctors, virologists, epidemiologists are coming out saying, look, you guys have known about this since December the 31st. And it's only this week now you're taking action and getting people tested and getting the right equipment, you know, here, there and everywhere. And it's still not enough. So, you know, I think yesterday the cases were, 209,000 or something plus like that yesterday. I don't know what the numbers are today. And deaths are already surpassed 4,600. Now, for some people, that may not seem like a lot of deaths for the vast country that the US is, but you know, I'm from a different standpoint, that one death to something that's preventable is one too many. You know, that's my personal opinion. Everyone can disagree with me, but you know, and we in the UK, our death toll is now going up, and there was unfortunately people saying, you know, that this only affects old people or people with underlying issues, and now we know that it's affecting 13-year-olds that are fine and healthy and dandy one minute, and then 2 weeks later they're gone.
You know, well, it's almost like I would say this, if you were going to categorize it into a couple of groups, it's almost sort of two groups, and that is the elderly people in generally, and we're talking really quite frail and elderly who seem to be really struggling. But then on the other hand, you've got doctors and healthcare professionals, loads of them seem to be dying. And it appears to be about the dosage. It's like if you say, for instance, you sort of like come in contact with a little bit of the virus, then your immune system has a chance of fighting it off. But people like doctors and that are getting this constant dosing of the virus, and they get a lot of virus in them, and their body just can't cope with it. So even if they're young, you know, it's getting them, and it's just terrible.
Yeah, I think the term they're using is loading, Pete, isn't it?
Loading, that's it. Yeah, virus loading, yeah.
So, you know, and like you say, doctors are getting exposed to it. And, you know, depending on where you are in the world, certain doctors are getting the right equipment, the right PPE kit, you know, patients being able to be put on ventilators. And we simply have not got enough ventilators. I think yesterday we were told that we've got 30, and the lady that was... on
that
the
was
news,
ridiculous,
say,
wasn't it? 30, 3-0.
She had to check and double check. Sorry, did you say 30? Yes, yeah. The number is 30. And, you know, I don't know how many hospitals we've got up and down the country, but that, what's that, one each, if it was scattered all over the country?
So it's crazy. It's crazy.
We just need to have that sorted out. I mean, we've got all kinds of engineering companies, manufacturing companies, and a cohort of of manufacturers, even Formula One companies, all getting involved in producing these ventilators. But, you know, I was speaking to somebody only last week, and they were saying, we've had all these different pandemic tests and scenarios ran, and we knew that we didn't have enough masks. We knew that we didn't have enough ventilators going back to 2014. So why do we still not have enough ventilators now when we knew that this potentially could happen at any time? We could have planned and had some ventilators, some masks in storage. It wouldn't have cost us that much to have done that, but we haven't done it. You know, and now we're panicking and we're asking people to make stuff overnight for us, but we're still saying to the EU, we don't want your stuff, we're going to do it ourselves. So in that time, potentially, more and more cases of people are going to be, you know, infected, and potentially we're going to have more and more deaths.
Well, this is it, and you know, and then we come to the ethical issue of who gets a ventilator and who doesn't. You know, and that's when we're getting into those kind of situations, it's just awful. It really
You
is.
can't put doctors
But
and nurses and specialists in those sort of
oh,
predicaments
it's
because
really unfair.
it goes against their ethical code. You know what I mean? The whole
It's
point is
really
that, you know, unfortunately, things happen, and when something goes wrong or someone dies when they've tried their best, they can say, look, we did our utmost to actually save your beloved person's life. But if they can't say that and they're saying, you know what, we couldn't do our job because we didn't have the right kit, that puts them in a really, really difficult position because they're having to choose the kit here. I mean, I read something somewhere about an elderly person in certain one country saying, you know what, let me go, I'm 90 years of age, give that to a young person. What?
incredible,
You
incredible.
know? It's just, you shouldn't be putting people and specialist people in that predicament. We should have the right kit for the right people. We're being asked at 8 o'clock to go outside our front doors. It's now 6:10, Pete, on Thursday evening. 8 o'clock. We should all be going back out there to clap for our heroes, right? Which are all these specialist people going out there, all these carers, all these volunteers that are helping out, all these paramedics that are doing their job to go and clap for all of those people, yeah? And I'm going to be doing that again. And my wife and my daughter and I were out there last week on our little cul-de-sac. Everyone was almost in tears doing that at the time. But we need to be doing the right thing for them because they're putting their lives on the line.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's all well and good us clapping, but that don't build ventilators, does it? And it doesn't create testing kits, and
It doesn't.
it doesn't get, personal protection stuff to care homes. I mean, it seems like there's a massive hole there that care homes are dramatically lacking in the stuff they need as well. So it just seems endemic that we're just not prepared, really. And what gets me is that, I think it might be a bit unrealistic to say let's have a big pile of ventilators waiting. I think that is slightly unrealistic. But I think you could have sort of contingency plans in place so that if something like this happens, you've already got designs, for instance, already created, simple designs for simple ventilators or whatever, that could be made quickly and already have arrangements with private companies to do this. You could almost have them sort of like, plans to tool up their factories and whatever. And it just seems crazy that none of that kind of thing's been done. It just seems like it's completely, I don't know, it's always like I've been asleep at the wheel, really.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the unfortunate thing. We've had our situation where our own Prime Minister Boris has been, you know, diagnosed to have had a mild case of the COVID
He
night.
looked rough the other night, didn't he?
He looked
God.
rough, and then we lost
He looked.
Matt Hancock
Yeah, Matt
to
looks all.
mild,
Matt's back today and he looks fine, so that's good.
and he's back. So you've had all these
Boris
different
is awful.
carousel of MPs actually presenting and fielding questions. You know, and then we had you know, Gove having to do his bit, and he couldn't answer the questions. And he did, you know, you ask a
They just
question,
didn't know, did they?
and
Didn't know.
absolutely. And I think it's that thing, Pete, where you know, you know someone's not quite telling you the truth or doesn't quite know the facts when they're answering questions that you've not actually asked them. You know, so you know, we're
Politician.
unfortunately going to be in the predicament, I think, if things don't improve quickly regarding our UK government. You're going to be seeing people, and the backlash is going to start going back to our politicians, but it won't be from the electorate. It'll be actually from the health professionals. There'll be a backlash from them saying, you know, we're not being led by the right people doing the right things for us here. You've got to protect us. You've got 500,000 frontline NHS staff, Pete, right? And of the last thing I saw of the, on the, from the, via the Financial Times, 2,000 of those staff had been tested.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. And I reckon, did I hear somewhere that a massive amount are off at any one time? So like a fifth or something? A fifth of, is it a fifth of doctors and nurses are actually off ill at the moment? Not ill,
Yeah,
they're
I
off
mean the thing is,
self-isolating because they might have it. It's crazy,
because
isn't
they
it?
might have it, Pete, or someone in their family might have it, so they
Yeah.
can't come into work with the risk that they potentially may have it.
So there's this. It was it a fifth that I heard? I'm sure it was.
I'm not quite sure what the
I
numbers
think
are.
it was a fifth, and like that's a massive. I mean, some of them will be genuinely with whatever, you know. But that's a massive pool that if they were tested, they could be back doing the job. And it's absolutely
Absolutely.
bonkers. You know, it just
Absolutely.
doesn't. You know, when the staff are under such pressure, and it's going to get worse most likely. I mean, it's interesting because the number of deaths today on the, I mean, it's terrible when you hear the news. It's just, you know, it's becoming like the death count news. It's just appalling. And it seemed to us to be quite flat today, the numbers. But then you start to think, well, you know, are these numbers really correct? Because apparently they're only the number of deaths from hospitals as well. So if
Ah,
you died
right.
at home or if you died in a care home or whatever, it don't count. So you think, well, that's a bit strange.
Well, it doesn't count yet, but it counts in everybody's family who's been impacted
Yeah,
by it,
exactly. Yeah, and it's, you know,
without doubt.
yeah, and it's things like that. And you think this is all a bit silly, really, but hey. Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that I'm puzzling about is, you know, when will the lockdown start to be eased? Because I think that is a big key to the economic conundrum and what it means for stocks and investing. And you know, realistically, we're probably what, 2, 3 months away at the earliest from lockdown being lifted.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, we've seen stats come out of China, and China seems to be through the worst of it, allegedly.
Yeah.
And in theory, that means that, as you say, we're probably 2 months, 3 months behind them. So that's going
Yeah.
to put us into July, August, September, potentially when we're
So
through
what
the
we
worst.
know is start of April. So April, May, June would be 3 months out. So April, May would be 2 months. I mean, do you think, you know, I mean, this is the other issue. It's like on the one hand, you've got the medical side of things, but on the other hand, you've got how long will the British public put up with it, especially if they start to not trust the government. If a government starts doing a really rubbish job on the things like the testing, on the things like the, you know, the health equipment, the ventilators, on the economic policies, because I think there's massive holes in Rishi's plan. If all that starts unraveling, people are going to get jumpy and not happy, and especially if the weather improves.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I can see them being potentially flexible with the lockdown, Pete. But your question was, when do I see the numbers reducing, or when do I see this issue we've got with COVID reducing? I really don't see us getting. I'm hoping for the best scenario and it being in 3 months, Pete. But I'm looking at it with regards to numbers, and I'm thinking, will we be through this in 3 months? And I don't think we will. And I
Yeah.
think actually there might unfortunately come to a stage where the lockdown is enhanced in the next 3 months. Whereas at the moment we're allowed to go out and do some exercise and go out and do some shopping, there might be less of that going forward when these numbers escalate and people have got even less kit and people start to get desperate. Because what happens in certain countries now, or has happened already in certain countries, I won't name them, but people have got to the point where they've got less money now, no money now, no food in the cupboard, and they're going, I'm not staying locked down, I'm going out seeking some food from somewhere.
Well, I think this is one of the issues. I think, like you said, on the one hand, it's almost like you've got the virus aspects of the lockdown, but you've also got the how long can the public bear aspects. And I, you know, when you start getting this problem that people can't eat and they're going to have to go out, you know, then you've got a problem. So yeah, it's really difficult to know.
One of the major problems we've got going forward, Pete, and I've done some work for the past 20 odd years with homeless charities and other parts that actually help with people around hunger, right?
Yeah.
Is the poverty side of it, right?
Oh,
You've
yeah.
got individuals that can earn anything between 400 and 2,500 pounds a week, right? But once that week and that month is over, they've got very little left to actually get by on, right? If you say to this person, okay, you're not going to get paid until we've sorted out the paperwork for this, your furloughed monies, yeah? And your company is saying, well, we're not going to pay for you, you're going to get it from the government or whichever way it works, yeah? Once you've had, if you're fortunate enough to have 3 months' salary saved up, and we know full well in the UK and around different parts of the
Oh,
world,
Owen.
very
Owen.
few people have 3 months of their salary saved so they can fall back on, right?
Yeah.
What happens to those families when they have run out of 1 week's money or 2 weeks' money or 3 months' money? They're now destitute.
Yeah.
They're, now the food banks are going to be overrun,
Yeah,
right?
but apparently there's a problem with food banks because they're not, there's no charitable donations happening and
This
stuff.
is
You know, it's a big problem.
what I raised in the last podcast. The
Yeah.
restaurants and the retail outlets, they used to hand over most of that produce that they didn't need, yeah, or was
Oh yeah,
near
you
the
mentioned
sell-by
that to
date.
me the other day on the
And
phone. Yeah.
those restaurants are all shut now, Pete. So
Yeah.
my very good friend Shaf, who runs the Chutney Ivy in Leicester, he was basically got a situation where he had to shut down, and the last of his produce he actually made into various different dishes and was given to all the NHS staff at the hospitals in around Leicestershire, which is
Yeah.
an absolutely fantastic guy. But all the other restaurants around are shut. So where does that food go? Sorry, there's no extra
Well,
food
there was
or
no, yeah, there's
spare
no
food to
extra
go
food.
anywhere. So you're
Yeah.
gonna have a problem with poverty, you
Oh,
know.
I think we got a huge problem. I mean, one of the things with Rishi Sunak's deal, this thing for the self-employed, yeah. I think I heard the numbers. It was something like there's 7.5 million self-employed people in the country, or something like that. But this plan of his was only going to help 5.5 million. So there's 2 million who are basically going to have to go on universal credit, and that basically means you get peanuts. And there was loads of people who are self-employed that if you've started your business in the last 6 months or something, you can forget it. You're not going to get anything from Rishi's deal.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I think
there's
there's loads of holes in his.
yeah.
It's like, to me, there's a certain basic unfairness. It's like if you're going to do a scheme, they said we're all in it together. Well, we're not all in it together. Some people are getting 2.5 grand a month. Loads of people are getting nothing. And
Yeah,
it
yeah.
seems ridiculous to me. It's like you can't expect everybody to just give up their work and then have no income. I mean, it's just basic stuff, isn't it,
I
really?
think the other aspect of it as well, Pete, is that I think there's about 40 banks that were put onto this scheme to sort it all out. And some of them are saying, actually, we don't want to be involved in it. We don't want to help with this because we're being overwhelmed. You know what
Yeah,
I
they
mean?
can't cope.
And
Yeah.
they can't
Yeah.
cope.
Yeah.
So, you know, the alternative would have been to share the responsibility with the HRMC. They've got access to everyone's records. Yeah. So regardless of what your situation is, they've got your records if you put in your tax return. So you could they all they have to do is punch in a number regarding your national insurance number and say you're eligible, you're not. We're going to put this straight into your bank account that we've seen on your HR, you know, HMRC records and punch that money in. Now, I'm not sure why the banks have to be at the lead of all this when HRMC could do it. Maybe they've not got the manpower to do it via HRMC.
Well, I think the idea was that the banks were getting extra funding from the Bank of England to do more loans and stuff, and therefore they could give more loans to the businesses. But the problem is, they're doing the usual thing where they're applying their normal lending standards, as you can sort of understand why they would, and they're saying, well, we don't want to lend you more money. And
Absolutely. So
that's
once
if you can
again,
get through to apply, because it's so busy. So.
so you're stressed, you're
Yeah.
anxious, all right? You're not sure if you're going to be going back to your job, and then you're being told, yes, you know, this has come from the Chancellor, yes, you're eligible. However, you're going to have to jump through all these hoops. And you know what? When we get through this, if you're fortunate enough to get through it, yeah, we're going to add some interest on that or take it via this and take it via that.
Oh yeah.
And you're going to have to repay it in this way and that way. But you have to jump through all these hoops to get it in the first place, which could take weeks, Pete.
Absolutely. And that's the problem, it's cash flow, isn't it? They're not going to have cash,
So, yeah, we're in a really sticky position in a sense
And it's
of that.
interesting, you can see it reflected in like the the universal credit claims numbers, because it was something like, was it something bonkers, like 950,000 last week or last fortnight or something, and that was like the highest on record by like a factor of five or something. It was just absolutely bonkers. So, you know, it's clear that this is causing immense economic damage, which obviously it would if you shut the economy down, apart from a few things like the food industry and the medical industry and whatever. Mind you, even loads of the medical industry has been hit because they've got rid of, I was reading Advanced Medical Solutions, AMS, their results today.
Yeah.
And they were saying that, you know, because that they do advanced wound care, yeah? And they were saying because elective surgery has been, you know, knocked on the head in a lot of places in the NHS and stuff.
Yeah.
Or delayed or postponed or whatever, you know, there's not so much demand for wound care products. So even they've been here who, you know, as a company, AMS has got an incredible record, you know, and for them to get hit, it's like, oh, blimey, you know, even they're taking it. So
yeah. Unfortunately, Pete, the domino effect has already started. We've spoke back in Feb, but an hour concern then, you know, when we highlighted the potential risk of this coronavirus, I think we'd probably touched on it for in a sense of what we thought would be an issue. We probably touched 1/10 of that, 1/5 of that, 1% of that. We never saw the sheer scale of what this would hit. We were talking about supply chains then.
Yeah.
And now it's hit supply chains. It's hit
travel.
It's hit leisure. You know, it's
annihilated, isn't it?
I mean, you name it. You know, so even the way that we live our own personal life, we didn't think, oh, you know what? All these businesses are going to be shut down. You know, you just touched on, there's 950,000 people have applied for Universal Credit, Pete. Yeah? And normally that would be 100,000 people over a fortnight.
There you go.
Yeah? But how many businesses have furloughed people or laid people off that will never, ever return, Pete? So the unemployment numbers going forward are going to be higher and higher and higher. As the longer this goes on for, yeah, it's going to hit and cripple GDP. So the risk we have is that not only will we fall into a recession because these companies don't return and they're not generating revenue, not generating revenue for our own GDP, is that we then fall into the depression, yeah, which is further down the line.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so stocks and shares and the volatility of what's going on, to see the market just ebbing and flowing up and down, up and down. We talk about the roller coaster effect, and we put that nice chart out with the little baby looking at the charts for the previous podcast. So the volatility is going to continue. We've been here from 7,500 on the FTSE. We're ebbing and flowing between 5 and 5.5, and we're in that range. My concern, Pete, regarding every stock regarding the UK and the US is when that trap door goes, you know, on the Dow at 20, at 19, on the FTSE at 5.5, at 5, at 4.5. When those trapdoor goes, everyone's going to go, yeah? And that's what happened when we were at 7.5, and that day when we went down 8.5, 9%. Remember that day?
Oh, yeah.
People were just in complete shock because the speed of that drop was like, what the is going on here?
Well, that's what strikes me. You know, it's like we've had a very, very fast down leg in the markets. I mean, like faster than I can remember, even in the credit crunch, you know, the markets just fell off a cliff. But since that, they rebounded a bit and then they've sort of been going sideways. But the danger is that it is just a ledge, you know, it's a bearish ledge. So we're doing like a sideways pattern and then we drop down again. Now, that's the risk. I mean, we don't know that's going to happen. And at this stage, it's impossible to know that that would happen. But if anything, the indicators are more bearish and bullish in terms of technical indicators and in terms of what we know about the fundamentals. I mean, as we've just said, it, you know, we are talking a major hit to economies. And it's the same in the States. What was it today? You had the I think it might be what they call the ADP numbers, but I might be wrong there. And it was US job claims were 6.5 million. Is that right? Yeah, I think it was 6.5. It was 6.5 million, and it was double what it would normally be. And it was also, I think in the credit crunch, the most they had was 9 million. So we're almost at that kind of level. And that was over the whole period. So it's just absolutely unbelievable numbers.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, those numbers are gonna probably
But they're
increase.
just a start.
It's
They're
just,
just the
it's just,
start of it.
yeah. I don't think we've hit peak numbers regarding jobless in the US or the UK yet. And you could see that with regards to what was being pulled out of the market in that first quarter from January through to March. You know, March the 31st, the S&P was down 20%, Dow Jones was down 23%, Nasdaq was down. I don't know what it was. I think that was about 14%. You know, I think the only stock that was up in the S&P, was it, sorry, yes, was Microsoft, wasn't it? One of the only stocks that was up across that time. So, you know, sorry, let me correct that. So Microsoft was up, Tesla was up, Netflix was up, Nvidia, Amazon. That was it. Everything else was more or less down.
But it's a sort of 20% hit or whatever. That's not that much. I mean,
It's not that
you
much, but you've got to remember that the latter part of the month we had a little bit of a rebound because all that money and financial engineering was thrown at the markets. You know, so at one stage, as we know, the FTSE was down beyond 35%. Yeah, and the Dow and S&P and Nasdaq similarly sort of percentage sort of come back at a fair bit at the latter part of March, but the middle of March, whew, you know,
Well, I say
crazy numbers.
when we recorded the last podcast, the double bill, we'd just gone through absolute carnage on
Carnage,
the
carnage.
market, you know, which is
Well, it,
part of the reason we wanted to do those podcasts, because it was
yeah.
and talk about emotionally I mean, hopefully I've calmed down a bit on this one, but on that one, you know, the whole thing was just bonkers.
It was.
And we've had some calmer weeks, but it's interesting that the volatility is still there. And like yesterday was quite a spanking for the markets. I mean, they were down about 4% or something yesterday. And yeah, you just get the impression that I just struggle to see how things can rise with such an ugly backdrop. I just can't see it.
Well, the thing is, and I spoke about Richard Hunter from Interactive Investor last time, and he spoke about the fact that we're in a financial crunch here, yeah, and it's about liquidity, and everyone's drawing the horns in and getting money back as much as they possibly can. And since that podcast, Pete, I've lost count of the number of companies, including FTSE-listed companies, that have withdrawn, cancelled, deferred their dividends. They're shoring up their defenses as best they possibly can for monies for later on.
But they're just
Yeah,
trying to survive, aren't they? They're
they're
just
trying to
trying to
survive.
get through,
But you would think as a FTSE 100 company that they would have a really really strong position to do that. But we've had the you know we've had some bluer than blue chip companies go, nah, we're gonna defer the dividends. You know what I mean? So yeah, so the problem we've got with that as well, the knock on effect is that, you know, and it's not just pensioners, but lots of pension funds and lots of individuals that want to take a lower risk in the stock market. I've invested in income stocks, in high yielding stocks. Now, if you're a FTSE 350 investor and all of a sudden that income is being withdrawn, where do you get your income from? Because you've been forced to go into the stock market, and now the very stocks that you're picking and choosing for safety are now withdrawing, not only down 10, 15, 20%, but are also withdrawing the dividend.
I mean, that's an interesting point. It must be a lot of people who, you know, didn't naturally want to buy stocks, but in recent years they've gone down the stock route because it's the only way to get yield. And now, as you say, they're having that taken away, and they must be thinking, "Oh my Lord, what's going on here?" You know, it must be quite disconcerting, I would think.
It is. I mean, you've got a situation. I mean, going back to the US market, because that's usually a good sign of what's coming our way, right? So you've got the largest S&P 500 companies, okay? 69 of those, Pete, yeah, have either withdrawn or revised forward-looking guidance, yeah, and 50 of them have gone, you know, we're going to withdraw dividends. You know, a lot of them are obviously blaming the COVID-19 issue and the fact that they can't forecast this and can't forecast that. And they can't, Pete.
Well,
So
no, they've got no idea.
they've got no idea. So these companies that are saying and have said, you know, and these people that have written articles in the past to say, oh, the forecast for this stock is this and they're going to do well, blah, 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 blah. They've all been cast to the rocks because these companies can't. These
Well, it's
CEOs can't
meaningless.
come out and tell you really what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 months regarding their company.
No, and this is what I've been saying a while. You've got the double whammy. You've got the problem that you cannot rely on historic forecasts. Sorry, historic results. So you've got historic earnings per share, historic dividend payments. You can't rely on that because we don't know if that's going to be the same going forward, and there's a good chance it's going to be lower. But you've also got the problems that stocks were on very high PEs, generally speaking. You know, there were loads of things on PEs well in the high 20s, well in the 30s, well in the 40s. And that's not normal. And the trouble is, if you've got a PE of 40 and then it drops to a PE of 20, that alone halves your share price. But then you're applying that to a smaller number, you know, smaller earnings per share. So that hits you even more. So it's almost, it is a perfect storm on the sort of multiple side of things and how that works, you know, how the maths works. And I don't think
Absolutely.
that's reflected in markets yet.
It is. I mean, the thing is, we're not in a financial crisis, but it feels like we are because that we've had
I don't know, we're about to get
well,
near one,
we
I
could end
think.
up, we could, yeah, you're spot on, Pete. We could actually end up there. We've had Barclays, HSBC, Lloyds, Royal Bank of Scotland, Standard Chartered, yeah, Santander have all halted payments, yeah,
Yeah,
regarding
they've all been told to by
their
the
well, yeah,
FCA, haven't they? Yeah.
they've been told, but
Arms twisted.
they're in the best spot. They're stronger than they ever were beyond 2018, sorry, 2008, Pete, yeah, but their loan, the actual value that have been being placed on them in the market, they're on the lowest PE that they were on in the midst of the 2008 crisis. So the people that were buying it at 50, Lloyds at 50 pence and 60 pence were going, bargain here, and it's yielding this amount of money, yeah, 5% or 3% or whatever it was, and not even getting the yield on that. And the share price, I don't know what it was the last time I looked, was in its 30s. So the pr share price is almost halved from its peak in the last year. And now you're not even getting a dividend on it.
Yeah, I mean it is ugly. And one of the things that I've got written down on my bit of paper here to mention was I noticed today that Japan is getting some coverage because it looks like up until now the virus had sort of dodged Japan, and Japan was sort of seen as you know it's doing really well because it's avoided it. But it looks like it's getting its teeth into Japan now. And the problem you got there is that obviously Japan's what, second or third biggest economy in the world. So they take a hit. That's another big whammy for the you know global GDP and stuff.
It is, but we have to look at the countries that no one really talks about as well, though, Pete, not just the behemoth ones, because they're all. Fo
Well, yeah, but the behemoth ones are going to have more impact. And
Oh, yeah, of
we're talking
course.
about
No.
Japan, US,
Yeah.
Germany, they're all taking big hits.
Yeah.
Italy's second biggest one in Europe. Their economy is absolutely spanked. Spain, the same.
Yes, I completely agree with you, but what I'm saying is. All the little countries that no one talks about, yeah, are being impacted, right?
Oh,
Because
yeah. I mean,
one of the things what happened, Pete, was that a lot of, you know, we're talking about people that worked abroad, okay, students that were placed in different countries, they've all returned back to these smaller countries, yeah? And the situations you've got is that they're all catching the trains, they're all catching the buses, they're all catching the planes. And so on and so forth to get back to where they wanted to get back to. And those countries now have got people carrying that and spreading that. So at some point or other, you're going to get a country, a small country, where the numbers to the percentage of people that actually live in the country is could be quite high.
Oh, yeah, no
But
doubt about
so
it. Yeah.
we look in the UK and say, oh, it's only percentage of a percentage of percentage that have died or have got the or have been deemed to have got the virus. What happens to a country that's loaded as a percentage with a large number of people with that virus?
Oh, it's you know places like India and that are in serious trouble because obviously so many people are packed in together. They live so closely in the cities and stuff. It's just gonna go through these places like something really horrendous. And
Yeah.
obviously Africa's got big problems that way as well. I
Yeah.
mean, it is grim. It's like things are tough for us here in terms of our health system and stuff, but these countries barely even have health systems.
Absolutely. Now, Pete, we spent a good 35 minutes, and I'm sure some folks are going, please, please move on, please move on. So apologies to ladies and gents for us trying to just cover this. We think it's very, very important, and we're hoping that by talking about it, we give you guys and ladies a little bit of a, you know, feel for what's going on. And I want to say at this point in time as well that it's very, very important for you all to look out for each other. Yeah, we've seen silly things going on all around the world where people have been selfish. We have to think about each other. We have to think about all those individuals that are all working and doing their best on all of our behalves so we can get through this. Together, we will get through this. Yeah, so think of the other person rather than thinking of yourself. Look after yourself and try and be kind to other people as well.
Oh, definitely. It's a time when there is no need for nastiness because the world's nasty enough as it is.
Yeah. And talking about nice things, Pete, once again, going back to one of your favoured stocks, we see Pets at Home again being championed because everyone's looking after their pets.
They had results
and it came
today.
Out with numbers. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I had results today, and it was interesting though because I heard it reported on you know the BBC News or whatever it was, and they were saying how well Pets were doing. But something that they didn't really pick up on was that actually, if you read the update, the backwards looking stuff, they're slightly ahead of underlying profit expectations. But actually, going forward, they did sort of say, well, our revenue will be hit a bit because they're stopping they've stopped doing grooming. Yeah. You know, grooming dogs and stuff. Stop that. Some of the vet stuff, they felt that some of the vets revenue won't be as good as it would have been. So presumably, you know, some of the more, I don't know, there must be like certain kinds of, I suppose, as the economic malaise hits, even people's animals don't get quite the treatment they would have got before, maybe. I don't know. Get the PDSA or something.
I mean, they're being looked after. I think what's happened is people are actually either buying more food, taking them out more, or looking after their pets more because of the actual revenue was still quite resilient, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think going forward, they were suggesting that some of it would come under pressure. I think food-wise, no, you're absolutely right. And I think the other thing is, you know, there's no blooming shops open, is there? I mean, you know, if you want an excuse to get out, going to get some doggy food for Fido is probably one of the best excuses you got from the police box.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking outside my window on a daily basis now, right? And I see more and more people walking the dog and exercising and running and jogging than I've ever seen down my, you know, coming through the little passage that comes into my ginnel. I'm seeing, wow, I've never seen these number of people coming past me so often because there's only a little cul-de-sac. I've never seen anybody, really.
Well, it's like everyone's suddenly a jogger and all your neighbours have suddenly got push bikes.
Yeah. Absolutely. On the subject of food, Pete, I saw something quite concerning because we were praising Ocado the last podcast of how well they were doing and how their share price had gone up and it's still holding up. But they were saying that they're under so much immense pressure they can't actually cope. And that's been going on with the others as well, Tesco, Sainsbury's. You can't actually get a slot to get an online delivery for 2 weeks, 3 weeks if you're lucky.
Oh, I think there's a big issue here, and it is getting me myself because obviously, you know, I'm a paraplegic wheelchair user, and judging by how this virus is getting people, the last thing I want to do is go out and get it. And I logged on a couple of days ago to try and do an Asda order, you know, online, thinking, you know, no problem, I'm self-isolating, I can just get it ordered, it will come in. And I thought I'd left it, you know, a few weeks or whatever. And of course, I go on there, you can't get any slots. So I actually emailed the CEO of Asda today or yesterday.
Wow, that's
possible, yeah. Mate. I don't take no nonsense, mate. You know, mate.
And, you know who I am.
Yeah, well, do you know what made me partly motivated to do that, apart from the fact I'm going to starve to death if I don't, was that I've been seeing loads of PR stuff from them about how we're helping customers. And I think I've seen TV adverts with even the CEO on it. And it's certainly, I think I've got an email from them saying about how we're looking after our customers in this thing. And I'm thinking, well, you're not looking after your customers at all, because like vulnerable customers are struggling to get food. And there was actually two items on TV news yesterday that were talking about exactly this issue. So I suspect these supermarkets are going to get some grief about this unless they get a grip of it quickly.
I think you could be right, mate. I mean, this is the situation whereby, we need to remain on lockdown, and we don't really want vulnerable people, or anybody for that reason, who doesn't need to or doesn't want to go out to shop, to add to their stress levels and forcing them to go out to shop. If you've got someone in your family who's already got suspicions of having that, you don't want them want to go out into the world to probably bring something else back with you other than your shopping. So you don't want to do that. You want to go online and be able to get a shop.
Well, it doesn't help the NHS. I mean, because one of the bits of the logic was that vulnerable people, really vulnerable people, should be locked away so they don't catch the virus, they don't put more pressure on the NHS. But if they're sort of forced to have to go out and shop, then it's self-defeating. What's the point of having a lockdown if the vulnerable people are going to be going out and getting it anyway?
Absolutely.
So they've definitely got an issue there, and it'd be interesting how that develops in the next few days. It'd be interesting to see what response I get from the CEO. I'll tweet it out if I hear anything.
Well, mate, if you get a response, that would be absolutely amazing,
And it's funny because I did write in the email. I said, "Look, mate," I said, "I'm actually doing you a favour, because you are going to get a lot of pressure about this in coming days if you don't deal with it." Just generally, because it's going to pick up as a public issue,
It is. And unfortunately, I think what's happened here is that they've stress tested all of them have stress tested the logistics hubs and all the rest of it. None of them stress tested it to the nth degree that we would be at this level where everybody's working from home, Pete. And invariably, and I'm probably I'm well, sorry, I'll take that back. Maybe I'm speaking for myself, but the more we work from home, the more we eat, Pete. I'm not sure about you, but I'm
Mate,
only
I'm
going
as big
out.
as a house now.
I'm
That's
only
why I
going
haven't
out.
got any food, because I've been eating like ridiculous amounts.
Oh, I'm only in the house,
Yeah.
going out the house for an hour or so per day now, right? And I'm finding I'm eating more. I'm doing less because I'm not going anywhere and doing anything. I'm actually eating more. I'm snacking more, and I'm thinking, I need to. I'm having this conversation with myself that, actually, mate, you need to stop. Are you actually hungry? No, you're not. But I'm snacking more. It's
I'll
just.
stop after that packet of crisps.
It's not good. It's not good, man.
Is a crazy situation, but it's funny because it comes back to the other thing. It's almost like everything that's gone wrong with the government's approach to the lockdown and stuff. It's like they've announced a lockdown and did it in a bit of a panic. And at the start, it all sounded like, yeah, that's going to work really well. But as we go through the days and the weeks, we're starting to notice there's all these holes in it, and things are falling through the cracks. And I mean, one of the ones with the vulnerable ones is, they were talking about really, really vulnerable people, 1.5 million of them getting a letter. I don't know anybody who's had a letter. I've got a friend who's tetraplegic, right? So she's like, she broke her neck, paralyzed from neck down. I'm sorry, but that must be pretty much as vulnerable as you're going to get in a way.
Absolutely.
She hadn't had a letter. And they're supposed to be sending out these Red Cross parcels of food, yeah? And apparently, they're only sending out like they're only doing like 10,000 this week or something. I mean, it's just, 1.5 million, they're sending out 10,000. I mean, it's just endemic of how things are falling through cracks everywhere. Like we said with Rishi, how there's a big swathe of the population who got no money. Yes, it's nuts.
I mean, they've got to step up the next week or so, Pete. Next month or so, everything's got to be stepped up to an nth degree. We really have to step up. Otherwise, all this good faith that Boris and Rishi has been given, by the
It'll
public,
go. It'll go.
it will go, and then you're going to start people just twist,
Well,
turn,
the
and revolt.
lockdown won't be sustainable if these kind of things aren't sorted out.
Well, I'm not sure if it's about the sustainability of it. What will happen, though, is that the rhetoric needs to be turned into action. Otherwise, the population, a vast number of them, will just turn. And once they turn, Boris and the government will then lose that backing. And once people turn on a government or another entity, it's usually everything that they don't do after that is picked up on.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're going to get the ventilators out of there. If you're going to do these parcels, get them out to people. If you're going to allow this person, that person to get a business loan and get some money so they can feed their families, then get that money to them fast. You know, otherwise you're going to have people really kicking off. And it won't just be a case of putting an odd tweet that's not very nice about them. They'll go on the streets, Pete.
Well, that's the thing. And that's what I'm saying about the lockdown, you know, basically won't work. It's obvious we need the lockdown to enable the NHS to cope. There's no way the NHS could cope if you didn't have lockdown. But the trouble is, if people stop supporting the lockdown, then it will just collapse. You know, it won't happen. That's one of the things. It's like the lockdown either ends because people just lose faith in it, or it ends because it's, you know, we've fought back the virus and we're progressively coming out of lockdown and there's a proper exit. But you know, how it ends could go either way, couldn't it, really?
Absolutely. I mean, on that note, this is obviously going to be, we're now on Thursday night, it's now 10 to 7. It's probably going to go out on Friday the 3rd. You know what happened last year, Pete, with regards to some of my stocks, of Burford being one and Future being another one.
Yeah.
So I've been trimming and selling certain things, and I've been doing that. When we talked about this in February, I was conscious that this was going to be an issue. Never ever dreamt it was going to be on this scale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I've been thinking, looking and reading everything I can get my hands on, and looking at all the different things that's going on in the world. And this week I just made a huge decision, and I thought, right, you know what?
Ooh.
I'm coming out of the market. not fully.
are you like changing gender or something?
No. So what I've done, Pete, is I've sold youth swathes of my stocks, right? And I've gone to the other side of the aisle, in the sense of selling stocks, trimming them, selling them. I haven't finished yet, and by the time this goes out on Friday, I would have sold some more, because my concern.
So you're actually selling now, then. So you really do think it could go a lot lower, then?
Yes, I do. Wow. I do. Wow. I see the markets will go up and down and up and
you
down.
You kept that quiet, mate, didn't you?
I have, because
we
I don't
want to... for 50 minutes and you haven't mentioned the most important thing.
Because I don't want to panic anybody, because my thing is that I do things quite contrarian, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's all hindsight stuff, Pete. In February, when we saw this thing coming down the pipe, I was concerned about it.
Mm.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I was concerned about it. 10. On a scale of what's happened, it's been 100. So now we've had March, we're now in April. I'm thinking, you know what? This isn't going the way it should be going. We should be on top of this. We've not hit peak numbers in the US yet. We've not hit peak numbers in the UK yet. So what do I do? I'm going to take some off the table.
Yeah.
Edge my largest holding of AstraZeneca and just watch the market. And if I see an opportunity to do some trading, I'll do a little bit of trading. I won't talk about it on Twitter or anything like that. Just do my own thing, do what I want to do. And then when I'm ready, if I'm ready, whenever this market tells me, I will start to do what I've said to you before with phased, scaled in movements and buying of stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this since Feb. And last time we were on here 2 weeks ago, I was still thinking about it, and I was selling and trimming, and I told you about a few things that I did. What am I looking at right now? What am I holding? I'm holding my pharma companies. I'm holding my AI companies. And I'm looking at other parts of the market which will be resilient going through this. But when if the markets capitulate, almost everything will be hit. That's my concern. And we've seen that already in the past week or so. Now, Pete, that's 49 minutes in, and we've got a minute and a half to get out of here. So what do you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, really, I'm not arguing with you. I mean, my portfolio at the moment is about 50% hedged. So, you know, so I'm making money on the shorts if and when the indexes fall. I've got a short on the S&P 500. I've got a small, tiny short on the FTSE 100. But yeah, I don't see any reason to change that stance at the moment. As we say, I think it's going to go lower, and the only way I'll even remotely think of taking the hedges off is if I see some really strong indications on the technicals, like 13-21 EMA crosses and the monthly candles particularly. If I see those looking better, I would take the shorts off. But at the moment, I think I'm staying short. Thank you.
Okie dokie. Right, ladies and gents, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We are going to have to cut it short.
I hope we haven't scared you too much.
Hope we haven't scared you too much. We look forward to giving you some more news in our next podcast. Thank you ever so much for subscribing, and thank you ever so much for enjoying the double bill that we gave you. And thank you ever so much for listening to this podcast wherever you are in the world. Please stay safe. Please look out for each other. And we look forward to hearing your comments about this podcast. Wherever you are, God bless. Take care.
Thank you. See you next time. Cheers.
Take care, Pete. See you later, mate.
See you, man.